I just saw a concert production in Long Island starring Alice Ripley as the witch.
Yes.
They're doing it again. It's a different cast, but she's the only one at Town Hall.
Dope.
But here's the magic. 30 seconds in, Eddie and I are like, why did we take the Long Island Railroad to see this show?
Oh, no.
12 seconds after that, we were like, I'm so glad we took the Long Island Railroad. It was the best and worst thing I've ever seen.
Oh,
it
wow.
was like even more so than I shouldn't say it out loud. I won't say it. But I saw a little Broadway musical last night that was interesting.
Ooh.
But Alice Ripley went up in It's Your Fault, and she has one line.
Right.
It's father's fault that the curse got placed and the curse got placed in the first place. She was out looking at her elbow, acting, then realized what was happening and did the following thing. It's his fault! And went back to her arms. And then apparently the rest of the song happened, though I don't remember it, because I was watching Alice Ripley laugh at herself, regain composure, and then prepare for the last midnight. And it was exactly what I wanted out of life.
That's amazing. I just want, like, that moment. I want that moment in a GIF so that I can send it to everyone I know.
Sipping on Sondheim while belting a Bordeaux, pairing the best wine and picking the next show. Here Broadway guests end up acting like loons. This you can find here on Tennyson Tunes. When Ben Bradley cries, when the fight dies, whether June's or moon, I simply turn to my favorite thing, and they are a Tennyson Tunes.
Welcome to Tennyson Tunes. I'm Jessica.
I'm Jimmy. Hi, friends. Hi, Mom.
Hi, friends. Hi, Moms. Jimmy.
Jessica.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. A little peek behind the curtain, friends. We have seen each other twice within 8 hours.
Legit. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we do, whenever I'm in New York, we record a bunch of episodes, as I've already said on the show before.
Right.
So this is one of those times. And that also means that we are drinking wine super early in the morning.
Breakfast wine.
Breakfast wine.
I had a breakfast Snickers a couple of days ago, and now I'm having a breakfast wine.
You're making some good life choices, Jimmy.
I am. I'm an adult.
You are. Jimmy's mom, Janet, you must be very proud.
You're so proud. She's not even worried about me anymore. She has her first grandson is graduating high school, and her second grandson is just, like, newly born, and
apparently,
like, army crawling and knocking over DVDs on the shelf and just like, I'm a baby.
So she's real busy.
Yeah, she's real busy.
Yeah. She doesn't have time to listen to this podcast.
She does not. All right? She didn't have time to do a podcast. She certainly doesn't have time to listen to a podcast.
It's true. Jimmy, let's introduce our guest, because he's amazing.
This. Yes. Speaking of army crawling, knocking over DVDs.
So, friends, John Ramsey is with us
John
today.
Ramsey.
Good morning. I can't wait for some breakfast wine. I'm going to put it on Cheerios.
Yes. Yum.
It's like a red. Ooh, this is a dry wine.
So, John, tell us a little bit. So, you and I met years and years and years ago, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if we did something before Into the Woods together.
We did. I think.
But I don't.
Or maybe it was a dream.
Was it 9 to 5?
I think it was 9
it
to 5.
It was 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the show that just keeps on giving. I
think I still remember the choreo.
Oh, I most.
Elbows all the time. 100%
do. And it's also because I did a concert version of 9 to 5 a couple months ago. And I told the girl who was directing, I was like, look, I did 9 to 5 for like a year. Just stick me female ensemble for soprano. Give me like 2 days and I'm there.
I'm fine.
Like, I don't, because we're not doing any choreography or blocking or anything. So, like, just, I know it. It's fine.
Yeah.
And it was great. Like, it all came back.
Oh, my God. It's like a Celine Dion song. That show
yes.
just falls in.
Yes.
I full on lerve.
All the elbows came back to me now.
And then we did Into the Woods together, which was a great experience.
A triumph with tracks.
Yes, a triumph with tracks.
Is that what you guys called it?
No, that's how I fondly remember
it. Yeah, because it was Into the Woods with tracks.
Oh.
And we fought those tracks.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes we did Into the Woods
without those tracks.
Without those tracks.
Those are the most memorable performances.
Yeah.
We're going to keep going.
When the confused actors look out at the audience and they're just as confused as the actors are.
Oh, but we had so many good times together, and I'm so happy that you're with us here today.
Yeah. Pleased to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, and to talk about Anything Goes.
Love it.
So we're talking about like a seminal work of musical theater. This is a big one. And I'm so happy that you are here on this journey.
That's why we're here at 10 in the morning.
I almost brought my tap shoes.
No! Yes!
I did not.
Oh,
I mean, it would have been a good show for it. Right. Jimmy.
It would have been like legit, like, let's put all of these microphones on the
on
floor.
The floor. Yes. Yeah, I would have been there with you.
Roll the rug up.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
And destroy this floor.
We're leaving anyway. So Jimmy is opening our wine right now. I want to talk about, like, let's go ahead and get into this. It's 10 in the morning. Let's get into the wine. So when I went to Chamber Street Wines, which is one of my favorite places in New York, if you are a New Yorker and you are looking for something that's kind of out there, but people who are super knowledgeable, I love Chamber Street Wines. I go in and ooh, that was a good pop.
Thank you. Chamber Street Wines.
Chamber Street Wines. I go in and every time they give me something amazing, and I've never been dissatisfied with anything. So yes, this wine smells fantastic.
This wine already like takes me back to being in high school and singing in wine caves.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was smelling. I, smell these oaks.
Yeah.
You know, like, the caskets.
Did you say wine caves?
Yeah.
Because he's from California.
That's part of everyone's high school experience. You know, like, when the bell rings and the whole third grade class goes single file into the wine cave? I was born and raised in Kentucky. We did not have that.
You know.
But you went to the distillery.
That's a good point. I think there was bourbon in my bottle.
One lunch, and then, you know, we could go off campus, so we went straight to the distillery. We had happy hour.
Well, this wine is French. It is incredible. It's called Domaine Gouin, and then it's from Bourgille. It's a Cabernet Franc, 100% Cabernet Franc. And Stephen Guyon is the winemaker on this wine, and he is kind of a shy guy. He kind of stays out of the limelight, but his family has been making wine since the 1950s.
He's a shy guy. He is a Mario villain with a little mask on. He's just like, hello, hello, hello. He's a shy guy?
Yep, that one. His family bought some land in the Bourgille Appellation, and that's right next to the Loire River. So we're talking Loire Valley right now in France. And his family was kind of living off the land. It was more of a farm than thinking anything about wine. But then they started farming organically. They started growing some vines because you're in the Loire and what else are you going to do? And they were really ahead of their time with the holistic understanding of how to farm and how to raise grapes organically and biodynamically. Like, they were on the forefront of that in the 1960s. In France, which is really cool. Yeah. And he's like a so respected member of the community around there. People really look up to him and his farming techniques and what is Stephen doing next type of thing. So let's take a little sniff of this. Ooh, this is going to be good.
This is a good one.
So I asked the people at Chamber Street Wines to give me something, because I think if Anything Goes as like a standard. Like, even if it's a middle school or a high school production of Anything Goes, you know what you're getting.
Another word for standard is classic.
Yes, for sure. And this has the classic qualities of a Cab Franc. Plus, it's super approachable and at a great price point. This bottle of wine was $13.99.
Shut up.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm already really intrigued. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of florals and herbals.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. I also, speaking of our last podcast last night, the other wines were very pungent, but they had, been setting out for a long time or for a while. This
we had let them breathe.
Also was, pungent. It was, full of nose flavors, if you will, right off the bat.
Yeah.
That's very exciting. Well, we taste through our nose.
Do you like a nose flavor?
I'm never going to say no to a nose flavor. You know me. Do you know me? Have we met? I'm not sure.
I don't know. We've never done a show together, and that's a travesty.
It's like the miracle of Southwest Florida. We were both there for years. Mm-hmm. It was always like we were passing in opposite classes.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I'm going off to the wine cave. You going off to the distillery?
You know it.
So let's go ahead and take a sip of this. Ooh. Mmm.
Ooh. I love a Cab Franc.
Yeah. Yeah, long finish, really nice acidity on it. I mean, a Cab Franc is going to be like a darker, fruitier floral.
Still going.
Yeah, yeah, it is like hanging on.
Oh, I love it. I love a red that like stands up enough to where it makes my jaw feel like it's going to drop a little.
Yeah.
You know that feeling? That it's a little tingly?
When you're like a snake and you're going to unhinge your jaw to eat a whole egg?
Kind of. It's remarkably similar.
The great thing about Cab Franc is it stands up to food. Like, it's a great food wine. This is one of those wines that I think for Thanksgiving is a good option. Because it can stand up to acidity. It can stand up to fattiness. It's a good wine for barbecue. Okay. Again, standing up to smoky flavors.
That's so interesting because you would think that you would want – because those are like heavy meals. A barbecue and Thanksgiving, those are heavy meals. And you would think that you would want something like light. Yeah, right?
I mean, you can. But that is a definite way to pair it.
This is also – it's not heavy, but it's full and it's rich, you know?
It definitely has a medium body to it. But the acid is like a medium plus. And so that's what has it sticking up against the big fatty foods, is that you need something that's going to cut through that. Uh-huh. It's kind of like, think about when you're having, when you're having Thai food or something super spicy, you need something a little bit fuller bodied to cut through that and to balance that out.
We need a really lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the Chardonnay that everyone brings to a cookout. It's just a vehicle to wash down the barbecue.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all it is.
Exactly. Yeah. But this would be a great pairing for it because you can actually still taste the flavors in it. Even though you have like barbecue and the whole thing coating your mouth, like this is going to cut through that. Ooh. So I'm getting some, a lot of herbal qualities, some minerality, some salinity on this wine, but also some cedar, which is interesting because this wine is actually fermented in a tank. I don't know where I'm getting that cedar from.
What causes that? How did that even happen?
Well, I think that part of it is it's from clay and limestone soil. So that's where you're getting a lot of that minerality from, is it's just literally in the soil. And then
I legit was like, where does the soil come in, too? I was like, oh, the grapes that they
they put dirt in the tank?
Yeah, like I legit thought that for half a second.
Well, and then this wine uses native yeasts. So they're not – so a lot of winemakers, if they want a certain kind of flavor, they'll make it happen with certain yeast. They know that certain strands will react with this grape and give you this flavor. And so they'll kind of experiment with that. Mm-hmm. This winemaker doesn't believe in that. He believes in biodynamic and organic farming and techniques. Right. So he uses yeast that are naturally growing on the grapes and they're naturally in the environment. And that's what he uses to create the reactions in the fermentation, which give us some of these flavors like cedar and herbs.
That is truly amazing. Because as we were discussing earlier, not the biggest fan of the biodynamic movement, but that's probably because it had really inferior product.
Well,
this is delicious.
Right.
I'm loving hearing the backstory.
That's what I like about the wine industry in general. It's like you have to remember that they're people at the end of the day. And it's people who are usually they have some reason that they like wine, whether it's I grew up as a science major and I understand it from a science perspective, or I grew up as a farmer and I understand it from a farming perspective, or I just really liked wine and then I got into like how it was made and thought it was really cool. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody got into wine for a different reason, but it was a human reason.
Right. Speaking of, we are now presenting our own Tannins and Tunes wine.
I wish.
Find on the website. Right?
I wish.
What would it be?
It would definitely be a red.
Uh-huh.
Having listened, I agree.
Yeah. And it would probably, I mean, it would probably be some form of Pinot Noir.
Probably.
Because I'm slightly obsessed with Pinot Noir right now.
It's the best.
It really is.
And it pleases everyone.
It does.
Can we get a sparkling red?
Oh, yeah? You want a sparkling red? We can do that.
If you want, I want a sparkling red.
Lambrusco?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's exactly what I was thinking.
We can do that. Two things you don't think come together, and they come together in perfect harmony.
Yeah. Well, if you want to hear more about Lambrusco, go and listen to our Mamma Mia episode, where we drink some Lambrusco on the show and talk about it. And you can hear all about the history of Lambrusco. Okay, so now that we are drinking wine and we're loving it, you can get this at Chamber Street Wines for $13.99.
Our Cheerios.
Look it up online.
Our Cheerios are soggy.
Yeah, Cheerios are soggy with our wine.
And we're going to drink from the bowl now.
Yes. Mm. So, John, tell us a little bit about your history, a little bit as an actor. How did you get into acting, and then your history with Anything Goes?
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, oh, that's a brave story. And I've always just thought, well, no, I was a stupid kid. I was a musician, specifically a percussionist, and I went to college on a full scholarship for marimba. Because that is normal, apparently. And, you know, I was... College was better than high school, because clearly, those of you who have not even seen me, but you've only heard my voice, big dork. Like, really, the biggest nerd you could imagine. And I was like, the band nerd in high school, and that's all I did. It's like, I just play marimba. It's the best thing ever. And I got a scholarship for
right.
it.
Like, here's no shame.
Marimba for the original theme of Star Trek. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, or like the iPhone ringtone.
Yeah.
Shut your mouth.
I won't. It's the truth. Yeah, so I'm doing that. I'm in college. Life got better because, like, I found my first version of my team that I could kind of be myself with. But it was still weird because super religious Kentucky.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a good way to think of it. It's like it's the first version, you know.
It's very formative.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't need to be like your team or your squad, you know.
Yeah. We were all figuring it out.
Right.
Many of us are still in touch, though.
I was going to say many of us are still figuring it out. You
know? Well, it was just 3 years ago.
So. That moisturizer.
You don't even know. This is more like a veneer of product. So I'm doing that thing, and I was very committed, and I still believed that I would someday have a seat in a symphony orchestra with a solo marimba career on the side. And about the time I was figuring out that that doesn't work for many people, there's like 12 in the world who are actually sustaining themselves that way.
Right.
John Ramsey's 12th gold-plated album.
Oh, God.
All marimbas. Coming out
the
next month.
The Mallet by John Ramsey.
Yes.
I have to drink after that.
Yes, I love it. I would buy it.
Now, well, get this. I was dating a girl at that time. That's what young gays did in the 90s in Kentucky. And I had just recorded a submission for a summer intensive. Like, I was all percussion. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And she was in this, what I was calling, this little dance show. And I didn't want to go, but I, like, finished my session, ran to this theater that I'd never been in from because it was the theater department's side of the building.
Right.
And went to see this little dance show. And at the end of it, I couldn't even stand up. Because I had just seen this thing that was so magical that I'd never seen before. Yeah. I'd literally never seen a musical on a stage.
What was the musical?
This was a selection of musical numbers because it was, they called it an evening of dance at Western Kentucky University.
Yes.
So there was a selection from Anything Goes, but many others.
Oh,
but there was like neoclassical ballet, legit music theater, all kinds of stuff. And I'd just never seen it. And I thought to myself, no matter how engrossed you are in this other world, you will never find the happiness in that you just experienced in 2 hours at this little dance show.
Oh.
And I went to the registrar's office and I changed my major. I didn't even know if I could carry a tune or touch my toes. And I just did it. And then, like, 6 weeks after I started taking my first dance classes, the faculty approached me and they're like, listen, it's going to be a lot of work, but if you do it, if you put the work in, you actually can do it because your body already has, like, turnout. You have arched feet. You have a sense of rhythm. There's musicality in the way you move already.
Because of the marimba. you're like
100%.
Right. Well, because of you have to be in a certain way. You have to be very limber for marimba. You've been stretching a lot.
I don't know that anybody would agree with that. Like, I've never seen, you know, the marimba greats being like, oh, gotta do my stretches. 30 minutes till showtime.
I gotta be in a wide second position for this song.
Look at this plie.
But that's how it happened. Yeah. And then I went into musical theater.
That's awesome. Well, and you've been very successful in musical theater. Like, very successful.
A lot of, we gauge success differently. But when I look at the last 25 years of my life, there were many, many, many years that I was on stage 10 months out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Without a side job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you've made your living.
And that's how I met you guys.
Yes!
Because we both know when we met in that theater, you really could not sustain yourself very long on those paychecks.
No.
Also, and that's how I met your mother.
Ah, there you go.
We'll see you after these commercial breaks.
So then you did Anything Goes at Paper Mill, correct?
Goodspeed was my last one.
That was it.
First, Cumberland County Playhouse.
Yes.
Then Dutch Apple Dinner Theater.
Yes.
And then finally, the Goodspeed Opera House. Guess which one was the best?
Dutch Apple.
Oh, my God, yes. No. Although it was Anne Neiman's, and I adore her, and it was a very good production.
Yes.
Of course it's Dutch Apple, because there is a buffet right there.
I mean,
I flapped into the peanut butter pie. It was awesome.
Nothing I like to do before a heavy dance show is to get as much starch in me as possible.
I learned a lot about my eating habits on those contracts.
Yeah.
Because I had a buffet available to me. I would come in, especially before Any Great Gun, I would come in, I would eat salad, I would do the show, and then I would go to Taco Bell. I don't know.
Was that just the way it happened, or was there, like, shame attached to that decision?
Well, there was this, like, I need to be healthy, I need to, like, eat a little bit of protein, like, I put some chicken in the salad.
Yeah, right.
And I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna be healthy. And then, like, after the show, I was so tired, and I was starving. And at that cast house, it was just, if you could get near the stove, it was a miracle. Because there were so many people living in one house.
16 people cooking in one kitchen.
Yes.
Disaster.
Yes. Ugh. And at the end of the night, I was just like, it's easier if I go get Taco Bell and go to sleep.
Right.
But it taught me a lot about, like, hey, you can't do that. Because then you'll get done with that contract and be like, why do none of my clothes fit? Why are they constantly having to, like, refit this costume?
I thought you were just also like, well, you get done with that contract and you're just like, it's 11 o'clock, time for Taco Bell. And
I mean,
you're just like, addicted.
Yeah, that also happened.
Yeah.
It was crazy. But, okay, back to Anything Goes. Not about eating habits. That isn't the show. Talk about Anything Goes and your experience with it.
It was an amazing experience because it was my second audition in New York. I moved to New York very late in the game.
Well, because you had been working.
You had been working.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's like life happened, and I decided now it's time for New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been to one audition with Kelly Barclay.
Mm-hmm.
She was auditioning White Christmas at Algonquin, I think. And the second audition I attended just happened to be her for Goodspeed doing Anything Goes. And I was non-union. Mm-hmm. And which I love non-union. I actually love both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
But I didn't know anything. And it's weird to be a 40, or maybe I was 41 then, to be at that point in your life walking into these rooms full of very talented people and highly regarded professionals, basically starting with, I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
I literally don't know, because I worked for 20 years off of 3 auditions.
Yeah.
So it was kind of scary, but I was like, you know what? Like, I'm just having fun. At least I know how to tap dance. So even if I don't know how the system works, I'm just going to flat ball change through it.
Right.
And it went really well. And it was actually one of those auditions where I was like, okay, don't get cocky, because you're getting attention, and that's when you fall on your face. So I just, like, stuffed it down and then went to callbacks and everything. They had me read for every man in the show, which is always so much fun.
Right.
Which is like, now I'm this young person, and now I'm the captain, and I'm trying to channel 60 years of age.
Right.
But it was a fun experiment. The whole thing was just a delight.
Yeah.
And then I did the thing that actors do. I completely put it out of my mind.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to hope for anything.
Right. Oh, no. The moment that you hope for it you
it's
don't get
it. It's never going
to
happen.
Yeah. I've been to so many auditions where, like, I don't even want to this thing. And I keep getting, like, called back and called back and called back. And then the moment I go, not even, like, want, but just go, yeah, I could see myself doing this. Or I could see myself on this contract forever. It flies out of my hands. You know, I don't get it. That's a real thing. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
So it went well. And then one night, Eddie and I, my boyfriend Eddie, mm-hmm. we were at Forza Bruta with a friend. And when the show was over and the rain had stopped inside, I took out my phone and I'd gotten my offer. I was so excited. And I got my card and it was like, it was dreamy.
Yeah. Aww.
And then I went and did the show. And you guys, there are shows in this world that give you more than 10 days to rehearse.
What?
Yes. And I found that out. In East Haddam, Connecticut. We had a full rehearsal process, oftentimes with multiple musicians.
Did you have like a table read?
We did a table read. The entire first day was just discussing and meeting. And the magical place about that theater, and I'm sure this happens many places, mm-hmm. especially as we're losing theaters,
yeah.
I think those that are still holding their ground become even more appreciative.
Right.
Of where they are and what they're doing.
Yeah.
In the process.
So one of the brilliant things was no matter where we were, no matter what room we walked into, everyone we encountered was delighted that we were there.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's not the case out there.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. That was a
at any theater.
Yeah. So it was wonderful. It was creative. Oh, nothing was like set in stone on day one.
Yeah.
We played. Oh. Every costume was built for our bodies. That was pretty cool.
That is neat.
That is fun.
Yeah, I've never felt better in a sailor suit. And let me tell you, I felt pretty good in some sailor suits.
So you were in the ensemble, correct?
I was in the ensemble covering the captain and the purser.
Yes. And did you ever go on?
I went on 3 times for the purser.
Nice.
A lot of
fun. What was that like?
It was to go on in that capacity, it was the easiest possible thing in the world.
Yeah.
Because it's an extremely small role, and it had already been filled to capacity by the man who was playing it.
Yeah.
So all I had to do was kind of just step in and follow the map that he had written, which was really funny and really wonderful.
Oh, good.
It's a very small theater.
Yeah.
The hardest part of the experience was coming off stage. Because you're in this new place, you're not sure mm-hmm. about what comes next. But that theater is so small that people would literally grab me and say, you stand right here facing this direction.
Great.
Because if you stand the other way, are going to knock your shoulders as they're literally running down a staircase or something like that.
Yeah.
And that was the thing I failed at when I look back at those 3 performances. On stage, pretty good. Off stage, I was like Kermit with his arms in the air flailing, and people were just pushing me. It was like I was the volleyball or something.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
It was thrilling.
But that's awesome. Like, what a cool experience too, that like we don't always get that experience even while recovering. Like, who knows if you're gonna go on, or you might get thrown on at the last minute and you're like, okay, here we go.
Did you know ahead of time, you knew, right?
We knew day of. Let's say around 3 o'clock for an 8 p.m. show.
Okay, wow. Because I've gone on for stuff before myself, but, like, I knew, like, 3 weeks in advance or something. It was like a person was like, I have this callback or something. Mm-hmm. I have this thing.
Always preferable.
Which is the best.
Yeah, if you think it's a thing, put it out there.
Yes, right. Exactly. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about Anything Goes itself, because it's such an interesting show historically.
Yeah.
So Anything Goes, written by P.G. Wodehouse and what's his face? I mean, Cole Porter did the music, but I'm trying to think of the other person who did the
I love that Jimmy poured my glass of wine, started to set the bottle back, and was like, well, while I have it in my hand.
Okay, Guy Bolton and P.G. Wodehouse wrote the book. That would make sense. Vinton Friedley was the person who was living on a boat because he was evading taxes. He was like, hey, I'm rich. I don't want to pay income tax. I can just live on this boat and be in international waters, play shuffleboard all day, and, like, not lose any money.
Dope, 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 dope.
So we did that. God. And then he was on this boat, and he was like, I want to see a musical starring Ethel Merman, because she had just come out in Girl Crazy. And he was like, I want to create a musical with her as the star. And he was like, I know P.G. Woodhouse, and I know Guy Bolton. You're going to write this show. And they were like, okay. And then Vinton Friendly had all these other people that he wanted to write the music who were not available, including Jerome Kern, because it used to be Woodhouse, Bolton, and Kern. They wrote the original Princess shows back in the turn of the century they went from London to America, and they were like the first Broadway shows.
The original Sleeping Beauty, the original Cinderella. No.
They were called princess shows because it was shows like Sally, where it was rags to riches. Mm-hmm. It was some girl, you know, falls in love with the right guy and ends up at the end of the day, he's a prince and she becomes a princess. Situation.
Perfect.
Right?
Done.
So at the end of the day, Vinton Friendly was like, yeah, sure, Cole Porter, like, write this musical. Fine. And it was an interesting show. There was a lot going on. The book was not great, but they were still going to do it. Like Vinton Friendly said, you know, I'm going to put my money into it. It's going to be fine. And right before it opened, probably a couple weeks before it opened, there was a shipwreck, like a real life shipwreck. And so they were like, well, this might be in bad taste to put up this show right now. So they reworked the book, and Lindsay and Krause, Howard Lindsay and Krause, what's his first name? I don't know. Guys, I'm failing.
It's Howard Krause as well. I thought it was Howard. Is it Howard and Howard? Howard and Howard. We're going to do it. Dial 666.
Russell Krause.
Russell Krause.
Howard Lindsay and Russell Krause.
For all your musicals.
They rewrote the book, and you will know them as the writers of Sound of Music, among other. Like, they had a very, very long writing partnership. So, really, there were only about 12 lines of original dialogue that were put into the newfangled production, but all of the songs and lyrics stayed.
Okay.
That is fascinating.
Right?
What were the 12 original lines?
That I don't know.
Go through them.
But it is a show that is full of songs that we remember. I mean, Anything Goes in itself, the song, is used in pop culture all of the time. You're mm-hmm. the Top is also used a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think.
I heard All Through the Night in commercials.
Yes. And I Get a Kick Out of You. That's always all over the place.
Legit. I remember You're the Top from those Disney sing-alongs. That was the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember those?
Yeah.
That's how I learned about that's how I learned about friendship. It was legit Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, and Goofy singing friendship.
What are you saying?
Friendship was added into the 1962 revival. It was not in the original production, because what happened is that Friendship came out after. No. It was a popular song on its own, but it wasn't in the musical. Okay. And so when they did the revival of Anything Goes, they were like, this is a Cole Porter song that people like. Let's throw this in there.
Because the version we know now is like the fourth version,
right? It is, yes. Yeah, it has been reworked many times. If you go to the Wikipedia page, it actually breaks it down song by song and shows you like the original versus the 1962 off-Broadway revival versus the 1987 and 2000, and shows you which songs were in what place. Because it's completely different.
That's amazing.
And, like, what songs weren't included at all. And
IBDB just went through, like, an update that's really good.
It is, yeah. IBDB is really good.
Because I check in with it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Because we like those random facts.
Yes.
That you can't wait. Like, I have to know who was nominated this year. Oh, my God, what did she play last time?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
And they went through this massive update where suddenly it's like, hey, you're in 2019. Mm-hmm. Let's hear it for the boy.
You look good.
Also, just a shout out, as I was doing some research about this, I love Guy Bolton and P.G. Wodehouse. I did my my first ever grad school presentation on Jerome Kern, and it was a 2-hour-long presentation all about Jerome Kern.
Because she's that cool.
We talk about nerds over here.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a lot. And so I went into some, because they were writing partners for a majority of his early career, so I went into a lot about Wodehouse and Bolton as well. P.G. Wodehouse has the most interesting story of any Broadway writer. I'm going to put that out there.
Well, first off, he has initials for names.
Like, I mean, he does.
That's... eclectic in and of itself.
It's true. During World War II, he was actually living in France when it was taken over by the Germans, and he was put in an internment camp because the Germans rounded up every man who was under the age of 60 and put them in internment camps. And
like you do.
So he was put into one of these, and he had to like sleep on the granite floor because there was 4 men to a room, and only the oldest person could sleep on the one cot.
Oh my goodness!
And he was not the oldest person. And then the Germans, like the British, took this list of people. They were like, "Hey, these people are in internment camps. Can you please let them go? Like, they're really important to us, mm-hmm. like important to our culture."
Yeah.
And P.G. Wodehouse was one of those people. So the Germans are like, "Okay, we'll let you out of this internment camp, but you're going to work for us." And so he wrote these radio programs for the Germans, like propaganda, basically.
Uh-huh.
And he was kind of cheeky and then like about the Germans, but kind of got away with it. And the British saw this as a total traitor. Like they were like, no, like you worked for them, and we don't know if you did it under duress or not. And so they turned their backs on him. And so then he was like in this hospital to try to get out of living in these terrible conditions. All of this stuff is happening. The war ends. France is overtaken by the Allies. And I know this is like a really long tangent,
I'm totally into it.
Then he and his wife go to Britain, and they're like, hey, can I please like go to America or someplace without having to be fearful that you're gonna try me for treasonous crimes, basically.
Right.
And they were like, no, you have to go back to France. And so they lived in France. The French, like, everybody is hating this guy. Eventually they come to the decision of, okay, we're gonna let him go and let him lead his life. They decide this in January of 1945. No one tells him until June of 1946. So he's just living
there. That is bureaucracy at a glance.
Right? So he's just living there like, I don't know what's happening. Everyone hates me. I'm going to get tried for a billion crimes. And then eventually he and his wife moved to America because he was like, people there like me and like people like these shows. And this whole time he keeps writing and he keeps making money as he's doing this, because people are buying his books and buying his shows and things like that. So right. He goes to America. He never leaves America ever again because he's like, by the time he figured out that he could go back to Britain and not be in trouble,
uh-huh.
He was too old. Like, he was like, I can't make that journey.
Oh,
it was so sad. But the greatest part of the whole thing is before they go to America, it says like they left as immediately as they could, but Ethel needed to get appropriate clothes. So they had to stay for like a couple months while she like restocked her wardrobe.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's also like, that goes to show you the power of art.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he wasn't just doing that to make a living. Like, that would probably fueled him to get through the darkest days of his life.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
For sure. Well, and that was the thing. Like, even in the internment camp, when the British first came and said, hey, you need to let this guy go, they were like, we're not going to let him go, but they gave him a typewriter. Which...
Okay.
I think it's very interesting.
Right. Because definitely, like, one of the tenets of, like, I think successful war is, like, definitely, like, propaganda and, like, suppression of, like, speech.
Yeah.
You know, and communication and art.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's so interesting.
Very interesting.
They're like, here you go.
Yeah.
Type whatever you want.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go. There's a little fun story about P.G. Woodhouse, more than you ever wanted to know.
I would have never known. I'm so glad I know that now. That's, mm-hmm. that's truly fascinating.
Are you going to put it into your next Anything Goes audition? You're just like...
Potentially. Or maybe my one-man show.
Yes.
Which is going to be called I Won't Dance.
Oh, I love that.
Don't ask me.
little Jerome Kern.
Will you dance?
I won't dance.
Mine.
Don't ask me.
And it's like legit, like an hour and a half of you just being like, I won't dance. Don't ask me. And you just like go over to the corner you just go, I won't dance. Don't ask me. And then you like leave and then you come on with like a beautiful gown and you're just like, I won't dance.
I'm like Kristen Wiig. Don't make me sing.
Don't make me sing.
Yeah, that's legit.
So, John, what are some of your favorite numbers in the show?
The title number is my number one favorite because even though I've kind of transitioned out of the ensemble, I believe in the ensemble and what they do. And honestly, that was the most joyous part of my career, was being to dance full out because for no other reason, the moment calls for joy.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
right.
That is a beautiful thing where you just get to do this thing that you love that you gave up your marimba for. But you get to do it, and it's totally justified. At times, it isn't always. Sometimes in musical theater, we know sometimes we just have to do whatever we're being told to do.
Right.
But
right.
those moments where all the storylines have come to this moment and what we have to do right now is just celebrate and let go and that is my number one favorite moment in that show.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Well, and you can actually see Ethel Merman singing Anything Goes, and I think she sings four other songs from the show in a televised special from like the 1960s, which I feel like is so cool because this show was made for her.
I mean, nothing's impossible. In this day and age, anything goes. I'm Pat Bain, and we've often rewound the clock since the Puritans got a shock when they landed on Plymouth Rock. Any shock they should try to stem, instead of landing on Plymouth Rock, Plymouth Rock would land on them. In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows.
Like it was written around her specifically and her talent,
right?
Which was very uncommon for the time. And so to have somebody that's like so that encapsulates all of that because that's who she is, I think it's really, really neat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Sutton Foster did a really good job in the most recent revival of making it different, but also staying true to what Anything Goes is and the style and the talent of Ethel Merman.
I also have to say the theater itself was definitely like encompassing, and I don't think it had anything, like they didn't do anything different to the theater. It was the Stephen Sondheim Theater, but like just the theater itself looks like you're in a ship, you know? So it was just like so cool to like just be all encompassing in that.
I wish I'd seen it.
It was really, really good. Also, funny story, they had when they were doing the rewrite of Anything Goes in the original production, they thought about like scrapping the whole thing and being like, it's not going to be on a ship because of this fire and people died and it was really terrible. But they couldn't redo the sets. So that's the whole reason.
Oh my gosh.
That it's still set on a ship. And they just changed the name of the ship.
That's real life right there. That's real life.
Right?
We can't do this. It's in poor taste. Do you have $200,000?
Right?
I guess we're doing it.
Exactly.
It's like if somebody was writing a musical about a plane and then 9/11 happened and you're just like, we can't do this. We still have the plane part. United 93, 2005, that movie happened.
That
you make a valid point, that, even though I'm weeping inside.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right. Think about what happened with Assassins, because Assassins was supposed to come out in 2001.
It was.
And then it didn't, but because it came out later and it already, like, it is the only time that a show has won Best Revival when it didn't actually play on Broadway before.
The purist in me hates that information, but I get it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to protest. Did not bring my sign. There will be no yelling.
I'm ready for that protest, though. Like, that outside the American Theater wing.
Justice
for Assassin.
Oh, my God. Just think, Justice for Assassin.
Justice for Assassin.
That's where this wine has brought us.
Well...
Now that we've got some wine in us, we're going to play games right now.
Oh, breakfast wine.
Okay, so our game today, it's all about Cole Porter.
Oh, yay.
So this is going to be really fun for Jimmy. At the end of the day, I know that Jimmy loves these games.
I love them.
Okay, so number one. In what state was Cole Porter born? Texas, South Carolina, New York, or Indiana?
Do you know?
I don't know, but I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was so witty. He was a closeted homosexual as you had to be. Only Texas can do that to a man.
I say Indiana.
Or Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
He was born in Peru, Indiana.
We just learned that on Broadway. Note to self, don't be gay in Indiana.
There you go. Oh, yes.
Wow. Shut up,
I was like...
Prom.
Mm-hmm, also Erie, Indiana, that old show. Like, you know? Do you not remember Erie, Indiana?
I don't think I do.
It was like Kids X-Files. So this boy... this. Yeah. It was the best. This young man moves to this odd, strange town called Erie, Indiana, and weird things happen all around him.
It's called Erie.
Right? It's like Twin Peaks for children.
If there is such a thing, well, I might have to check that.
Right? Apparently there was.
It's called Erie, Indiana. It was on Fox.
Well, and in addition to being a closet homosexual, Cole Porter came from a really privileged family. He grew up, like, super duper rich and, like, went to boarding school, which leads us into our next question. What college did Cole Porter attend? Was it – oh, hold on. I lost it. Was it Princeton, Yale, Harvard, or Oxford?
I feel like it was Oxford.
I say Princeton.
It was Yale.
Oh,
he actually wrote the now is used as the fight song for Yale. He wrote it.
Oh, well, that's fun.
Which is really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he wrote numerous songs that would become the football team's fight songs, including Bingo, Eli Yale, and Bulldog.
Do you think that they know that nowadays?
Oh my God. He wrote Eli Yale.
Yeah.
Oh.
Which is in Anything Goes, and I never actually thought about that moment.
Oh!
Because it's not a real musical moment. It's just something that the old man keeps saying. What is it? Elijah? Whitney,
yeah.
Oh.
It's so funny. That was him. That was
Cole
Porter.
Thanks for having me. I'll be on my way now. Because I hate losing.
Well, I think you'll get this one.
There's so much.
What 1934 show did Cole Porter write with such songs as You're the Top and All Through the Night? I think you'll get that.
Oh, my God.
I'm not even going to give you answers.
Is it Anything Goes?
It is Anything Goes.
Confetti.
And it says here that... Porter described Ethel Merman as the ideal singer because her rather loud style guaranteed that all the lyrics would be heard.
Truth. That was when beauty was secondary.
Yes.
It was all about do they hear you in the balcony.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you do it without a microphone? Okay. What European cities did Cole Porter call as home? Were they London and Paris and Venice, Rome and Dublin, or London and Rome?
Paris and Venice.
You are correct.
Ooh.
I remember reading about him at one point, and there was this long stretch about Venice. And to me, it was like reading an E.M. Forster novel or something, where it's just like this transplant in this really exotic location. And
yep.
Everything, if it was about like his morning tea, just sounded like the most extravagant, beautiful thing ever.
Oh. Well, because that's what he did. Like, he lived a luxurious life because he could. And he was used to it. Like, he had grown up in the lap of luxury and wanted to continue that. And, I mean, nice work if you can get it.
I'm going to go back to my studio apartment after this.
Right.
Where I share with three people.
You do not. You share it with yourself. And all of your zero waste.
And all of my zero waste.
Yes.
Where's my bag? Oh, I have my bag with me.
Okay. Is that a thing you're doing?
Yeah.
Bravo.
On a zero waste journey.
I legit, like, did we talk about this last night? It also comes up in auditions all the time because I wear this bag on my hip. Wherever I go, so it's like 3 for 3 last auditions I've been going to, they were like, hey, what's that bag? And I'm like, well, let me tell you. And then they like, remember me.
Saving the planet one musical theater actor at a time.
Yes.
I kind of want to write a blog called The Zero Waste Actor like, what is it?
Please do, because I can learn from you.
Right.
I tried it. Miserable failure.
Oh, all right.
I haven't even tried it yet.
First step for me. Don't just, like, go all in. Like, I made a promise to myself to try by the end of the year. So I'm
Stages.
Yeah, I'm slowly going there. So I'm, like, using all my toothpaste, and then my toothpaste runs out, and I throw it away because I do. But then I go, okay, now I don't have any more toothpaste. I've got to learn to make toothpaste.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so that, and then I use all of my dish soap, and then I'm like, how do I make dish soap? And, like, it's just processes. And then sometimes I'm still throwing things away because it still happens. But I'm more mindful of it and dwindling it down. So, like, just don't, like, jump all in.
I love it. I think this blog needs to happen because I'm ready for it. Okay. What Porter song tested the censors with its rather suggestive lyrics? Was it Night and Day, Love for Sale, I Concentrate on You, or From This Moment On?
I feel like the creator of this game wants us to say Love for Sale because we already know that it's tawdry, just in its presentation. But I feel like it's a ruse. We're supposed to choose something else. Yet I'm going to say Love for Sale.
I'm going to say I Concentrate on You.
It is Love for Sale.
I'm the winner.
Yeah.
I'm the winner.
Because it's about a prostitute.
Yeah.
Get it?
Oh.
But, like, there's so many. Like, Let's Misbehave. Come on.
Right. I know.
Also think, does anybody remember that Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen song, Brother for Sale?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I think.
I'm proud to say that. I do not.
Okay, it's like, Brother for Sale.
She literally is, like, selling her brother.
Yeah.
Really is better.
Right, but that's what I think of when it's like, Love for Sale, only 50 cents.
Oh, no!
That's not it. That's not it. What was Cole Porter's wife's name? Anne, Linda, Margaret, or Judith?
Linda sounds familiar.
Ashley, what's her bucket? the one who played her in
the
Lovely.
Yeah.
It was Linda.
Yay!
What are you like? Four for six? Four for seven?
Didn't they like? This is so bad, but wasn't there something about their initials? Like, they always monogrammed things?
They did, yeah.
That's the only reason I was like, I remember an L.
Well,
must
and
be.
They stayed married until his death. Like, even though he was a homosexual and was, I mean.
Yeah. She got it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, wasn't it sort of, like, open or whatever?
Well, it was a white marriage, I think is what they called it.
Oh.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It means that they're not doing anything, but they're technically married.
Okay.
And everybody knows it.
So the nation will tolerate them.
Yeah.
Because they're playing along. Just like 40 years before that, there was the Boston marriage where two women could live together.
Yes.
Presumably old maids.
Yes, exactly.
And only in Boston.
At first, but that's where it came from.
Oh.
Apparently that's where it really took
off. Oh, wow.
Yo, Boston.
I do not want to know about a red marriage, like a red wedding.
No.
God.
Oh, God.
Okay, so we're going to do four more questions.
Thank you for keeping us on track, Jess.
Yes, of course. What songwriter did Cole Porter look up to and praise the most? Was it George Gershwin, Irving Berlin, Harold Arlen, or Johnny Mercer?
I feel that it was Irving Berlin.
I say Lady Gaga.
It was Irving Berlin. But good guess, Jimmy.
Because he basically
set
the mold.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. He was the father of musical theater.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And Cole Porter was like, I want to do that. What was Cole Porter's last project? Was it Kiss Me, Kate, Out of This World, Can Can, or Aladdin?
Like the 1992 Aladdin. I would love if that was it.
I feel like Kiss Me, Kate was at least the last one he attended the opening of.
Uh-huh.
Or something, because that was after the accident. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Kiss Me, Kate.
I'm going to go with Kiss Me, Kate as well.
It was actually Aladdin.
What?
The work remained unfinished and was intended for television.
Oh.
And I don't even know any of it.
Yeah.
I know.
I have so much Googling to do.
Right? Exactly.
I've got to go. Bye-bye.
Okay. Last two questions. What New York hotel did Cole Porter call home for many years? Was it the Plaza, the Waldorf Astoria, the Ritz-Carlton, or the St. Regis?
I want to say it was the St. Regis just because that's my favorite. But I feel that that's not good logic to follow.
I feel that that's my favorite, and I also feel like I am the reincarnated Cole Porter, so it's that.
I vote differently, though. I'm going to say Waldorf.
It is the Waldorf Astoria.
What?
Yes! And you can still see his piano there today in the lobby.
Oh,
so go take a little visit.
Stopping in. I believe it's on Lex. We'll find it some.
I got some Googling to do. I got so much Googling.
It's true.
Where's my list?
Okay, last one. Who did Cole Porter collaborate with while creating Kiss Me, Kate? Was it Sam and Bella Spiewak, his wife Linda, Moss Hart, or Ira Gershwin?
Spiewak.
You are correct.
Oh, I'm so glad I read all of those CD jackets in the 90s.
You're both correct. So good job. I think that John Ramsey wins. Yeah. I mean, of course.
Again, confetti.
Yes. Of course John Ramsey wins.
Of course. If John Ramsey did not win, we would make it so that John Ramsey won.
Oh, John Ramsey appreciates that.
You're one of the people that when you say their name, you say their full name.
It is true.
I'm like Madonna or Cher. It's just one thing. Just jam it all together. Yeah.
It is true, though.
That's because you know 700 different Johns.
That true. Yeah. But it's like you're not – there are some people that are their last names. Like, you know, they're – you know. But sometimes you can call yourselves Ramsey, but it's like John Ramsey.
Yeah.
You know.
I also think that it's because, like, you have introduced yourself that way, but other people call you that. Like, other people that I have been around, like in the South Florida theater district.
Do you want to hear a funny side story?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have one thing that I've contributed to the realm of musical theater, and that is my hunker.
You see the hunker,
yes? Yes,
the John Ramsey hunker.
For those of you who can't see us right now, the hunker is a move you make where you put one fist on the knee and you kind of bend down on one knee, but one leg is still straight. And so that's so that the actors in the middle of the farmer and the cowman can let you know I'm listening to Aunt Eller talk about these ideas, yet I'm providing levels for the audience. Some are fully kneeling, some are standing. I'm in the middle doing a hunker. I just got a text message from someone who's setting a concert production of The Music Man that's like, full disclosure, the John Ramsey hunker has made it into the show. And I now have a list. I want to say I've got like 7 directors who have emailed me or messaged me. They're like, I just want you to know I 100% used your move. And it makes me so proud.
Well, this makes me – I have recently used the John Ramsey hunker.
Yes!
And I forgot to tell you about it. But I was doing a staged reading of a show about Fort Worth.
Oh, yes.
A perfect opportunity
to use the hunker. Texas is screaming for a hunker.
Right?
And the whole song about it.
Were there boots involved?
There were boots involved and hats.
I can see it.
Yeah. And even with holding my script, I still... did a hunker.
Has anyone seen Oklahoma yet? The
I'm
revival
seeing it tonight.
Okay,
yes. Or
is there a hunker?
I'm going to go with no, but there's plenty of other things. I can't wait for everyone to see this revival.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to see it. It can go to hell. It doesn't have a hunker. It doesn't have a John Ramsey hunker.
Listen, there's more to life than a hunker. Did I just say that?
You heard it here.
That's a good trademark.
Straight from John Ramsey's mouth.
You gotta get, I'm like, legit, you got to get royalties off of that hunker.
I think that ship has sailed. Just like. Let's not reference the Titanic disaster of whatever.
The Titanic.
John Ramsey, where can people follow you on social media?
You can follow me at the Ramsey Man Can on Instagram. I sometimes will friend people on Facebook, although if I don't really know you, that's not likely. Sometimes I tweet, and that's at the Ramsey Man Says.
I love it.
Legit.
So much good branding.
If there was another, Willy Wonka movie, you would be that candy man. I would legit see
I'm flattered and insulted. That's a little creepy.
No, but, in a good way. It wouldn't be
But I was listening to that song when it came to me. I was like, what's my handle? What's my handle?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I was like, well, you're kind of a song and dance man. And then that song came on.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh,
yes.
My. Oh. Okay.
I love it.
Also, I lure children to, my band with.
Oh, guys. I promote type 1 diabetes.
Jimmy, where can people find you?
People can find me just hunkering down on Twitter and Instagram, doing a John Ramsey hunker, at Jimmy_Robertson on Twitter and at Jimmy Robertson on Instagram, and maybe soon the Zero Waste actor.
Yes.
Do it.
I'm there for that.
All right. And you?
You can find me at JMHumphrey1 on all of the things, and you can follow Tannins and Tunes at Tannins and Tunes on Instagram and Twitter, and make sure to keep following us and leave your reviews, because for every review we donate $1 towards fire relief in Napa and Sonoma,
where the wine caves are.
Yes, so you can go visit the wine caves with Jimmy, and you will be promoting fire awareness and fire help
and healing the world.
So it helps us, and it helps the world. So make sure that you get your reviews in, and we will also pair a wine with your username from iTunes and Stitcher. Cool. Yeah. John Ramsey, thank you for joining us. This was so much fun.
I'm so
happy to have you here.
Die.